This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
Plenty to get into today. We will have a wrap-up of Decision Day, something that we thought would have more drama than it did. There was a little drama, but not really enough to warrant what we'd hoped for. But in either case, we'll crown their ass again. Manchester City, four straight. I'm sure Beam's already thrilled to give his stirring tribute to his favorite other Manchester team. We will also talk about legend retiring from the world of soccer.
My guy.
Yep.
Yeah, I love this guy.
A move that, at least to me, was a little surprising with one of the Premier League teams. Moving on from their big name coach, we'll discuss that. And what's it like if you, what would it take, I guess, for one of the teams that has not lost all season long to see out a perfect season? We'll discuss all that next. Well, sometime. We'll do it on this podcast.
Yeah, at some point we'll get to it.
He's Brandon Beam. I'm T-Bone. Thanks for listening. Beamer, how's your week been?
Been good, man. Yeah, been good. Can't really complain about it at all. William yesterday, so we're in two nap silos.
Okay.
So we're still on the two nap trend. One is a morning nap, and it can go anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, depending on when he gets up and how he slept the night before. So it's usually 30 minutes to an hour. The afternoon nap is what we all look forward to in our house. So that's like at least an hour and a half, 2 hours if it's like a really good day.
Yeah.
And that's usually like when I need to get stuff done in the middle of the day or need to take a nap. Like if I need to reset for the afternoon too, that's when that usually happens. So yesterday I walk in the house and he's up, and it's, sometimes that happens. I'm like, all right, our babysitter's there and he's kind of eating a snack. I'm like, okay, you know, short nap today. She's like, no nap. I said, oh boy.
Oh, here we go.
I'm like, all right. So I don't know if that's like his body just kind of naturally transitioning to like, I don't need this, and I'm just going to sleep harder in my afternoon nap. So she's like, just be aware that that's something that happened. I'm like, all right, he seems to be in a good mood. Great mood, like awesome, running around, having a great time. We're FaceTiming grandma and everything when he's eating lunch like we usually do. And we get to about like 11:45 noon. I'm like, I should probably put you down earlier just because.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't taken your morning nap. You're probably pretty tired. Put him down. He sleeps for like an hour and a half. I'm like, all right, that's pretty good. But I would like it to be longer considering you didn't have a morning nap. Had him put him down for an additional one at like 3:30 in the afternoon where I'm like, hey, man, you're too much for me right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're a little pistol. You're not feeling very good. Anytime that I'm taking something from you or we're like repositioning you to go somewhere else instead of, you know, eating handfuls of dirt of houseplants, right. I'm like, he's just crying.
Yeah, throwing his fit.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what, buddy? I'm going to put you in the sleep sack and we're going to put the pacifier in your mouth and we need a little 30-minute reset here. Boom, hits the pillow out. Not hits the pillow. He doesn't have anything in his crib.
Yeah,
but
I know what you mean.
So we had to do a little reset yesterday. Mare got in the house and usually, you know, when she gets home, Theo and William are running around and they're so excited to see him and she gets home and Theo's there. She's like, where is William at? I'm like, he's sleeping because he needs to be.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, that kind of a day. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure was.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty good day other than that. I mean, he got up from his like, you know, late afternoon nap and he was pretty cool all the rest of the day. But yeah, it was something there for like a 45-minute span in the middle of the afternoon for sure.
The merging of the two naps into one nap is quite the tricky. It's one of those more like everyone knows potty training is difficult with kids and like getting them to learn how to eat certain foods and different things like that, transitioning off of a bottle, that kind of thing. But yeah, the getting them to go from where they were doing two naps into one nap and figuring out exactly how to make that work, it can be a challenge. I'm not envious of where you're at right now.
How's your week? All right. You sound a little gunky. Yeah.
I'm a little gunky. I think there's a little gunky going in the house, maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. But I know this, like what I found this out last week, which was vomiting with children, always fun.
Mm-hmm.
When your kids though eat Oreos before they vomit, that's a new one on me. Had not seen that before. And
haven't smelled that before.
Well, it wasn't so much. The smells are the smells. Like I'm, you know, at this point, you're a parent. You're just in it. You kind of get used to it.
Yeah.
It was the one where the 4-year-old had eaten like an Oreo, and I knew about this, but no one else knew about the Oreo. And so later
surprise
that night,
Oreo.
My oldest daughter is up at like 10 and Abby comes out of her room and she's going like, ugh. And so then Viv is going, mom, dad, I think Abby's not feeling well. And all of a sudden, I hear it. And then she's like, oh my God. And like freaking out. And then Melissa runs upstairs. And she's like, oh no, what is this? Is this blood? Like what? Because I mean, she vomited out, dude, jet black. Like it looked like she vomited motor oil.
God.
And so then, of course, everyone is freaking out. And I'm like, it's from the Oreos. She had Oreos. I let her have Oreos. And then instantly all the eyes come to me of like,
you did.
Why did
what?
You let her have Oreos? I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm dad. She said she wanted an Oreo. How am I to keep a kid from an Oreo?
Had dinner already. It was good.
Yeah. This kid's like barely holds any weight. She's going to blow away in the breeze. I was like, she wants to eat an Oreo. I'm not going to stand in her way. She needs to probably put on a couple LBs.
When did you guys do, start juice? Because Meredith and I have talked. I was like, I don't think we're ever going to introduce.
We've never done it. We never did it with the kids. We didn't introduce juice. We did water and then, like, milk, obviously. Yeah. And then, but, like, what we will do occasionally is, like, some Pedialyte or something, like, when you have a sick kid or something.
Yeah.
We'll do that. But nothing beyond that, really, just because... Yeah, we, for whatever reason, like, we just have never done it. I'm not against juice. I'm not anti-juice. I had juice all growing up as a kid. But we're trying to keep them away from pop as much. Mm-hmm. That's with the older two now. They, like, we go to McDonald's or somewhere. They're like, can we have Coke? And it's like, all right, this one time, yes. Like, once a month, we'll let them maybe have a drink, you know, like that. But nothing, we're not pumping them with
Coke. Let them have a hazy IPA from time to time.
They like to sit on dad's lap and have a little sip of bourbon. So let's talk about the crew real quick, and then we'll get on to some European soccer because there's a lot of news going on there. But we'll start with the crew getting not one but two wins on the road in pretty reasonable, easy fashion, I would say, at Montreal, then at Chicago, taking care of it. I especially liked that it was 3-1 crew in Chicago, given that the 312 area code is one of the main area codes of Chicago, and that is what the crew supporters group in Chicago calls themselves, is 3-1 crew.
Yeah.
And so I liked it that the 3-1 crew was there in witness of a 3-1 crew victory. So that was a nice little symmetry there. But no Cucho for either of these games, and they looked like they didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, I was excited about that. Going back to the midweek last week in Montreal, that was always going to be kind of weird, right? Coming off of Hell is Real. Like, what are you... Like, now all of a sudden, like, you're thrust into three games in 7 days. You're coming off the big dramatic victory over Monterey. There was a lot. I mean, you had some time off in there. Obviously, you had the clunker against Cincinnati. But to see them go on the road to do that in the Laurent Courtois derby, I thought was pretty awesome.
I agree.
For them to go up on the road and get 3 points. And then when you went into Chicago, I'm like, well, you just did it in the midweek.
And Chicago is a bad team.
Yeah, and they're not very good. You're playing Soldier Field. Like, it's always kind of weird. I was thrilled with them. And they're actually 3 points ahead of where they were last year at this time, even though it feels like an MLS over the last 6 weeks or whatever it has been since they had gotten a result and a win in the league. Like, it feels, at least to me, like they're on a little bit more stable footing, stable ground. Even though they did it without Cucho, it feels like they're on more stable, solid ground
right now.
Well,
I think it at least reestablished them as, especially there was a moment in the Chicago game where they got that goal because the crew were up 2-0, and then Chicago scored a goal. And you could almost see all the crew players going like, what? That's BS. That's no. And they went almost, it felt like almost immediately right back down and said, we're winning by 2 goals. And just went back, and Jason Russell Rowe got his goal. And
he's playing really good at the minute.
Oh, dude, he's playing great.
Yeah.
Good timing for him, too, with everything coming up.
Sure.
Olympics and, you know, all that stuff. But in either case, what I'm saying here is I like the fact that the crew basically said, all right, we may not be the supporter shield team in the regular season, but when we need to beat lesser teams, we can easily go and do that and get our points. And then that helped out quite a bit. I mean, you're looking at the standings now. The crew are on 21 points, so they are in seventh, tied for seventh with Charlotte, which is always weird to me how MLS does this because they look at goal differential, but matches played, the crew have one fewer match played than like all the teams ahead of them, and in some cases two with Miami's played two. But like TFC's on 22 points on 14 matches played. Red Bull's 23 points, 14 matches played. City's on 23 with 14 played. So I'm just saying, like, you make up one of these games and get 3 points, and those other teams, like,
now all of a sudden you're in third.
Yeah, you're in. Yeah. So like it's very compressed behind Miami and FCC. And dropping a basically six-pointer to FCC does not help things. Mm-hmm. But if that game goes a different way, you're looking at Cincinnati being on 27 points and the Crew being essentially on 24. That's not that seems more realistic to me. It seems like where they kind of should be. So I'm not saying that is what happened. It didn't.
Yeah.
You're down to them by 9 and you're 10 behind Miami in the Supporters Shield race. Miami does have 2 games in hand on you, but even accounting for that, you are still plenty off from where you need to be if you want to win the Supporters Shield. But that's all right. I want them to win an MLS Cup again, if that is in the offing. Long season ahead of us.
Yeah.
I do feel like this Orlando game this weekend is big enough. Like, you're going to need all hands on deck for this. And then it's, you know what you've got. This one on Saturday, and then a week from Saturday is the big one, the trophy, the Champions Cup, the trophy that everybody should be focused on. I do feel like if you can even get a point out of this game, that's a good thing.
Well, also, especially too, I mean, you're going 3 games like on the road, 4 including the Pachuca game. Like, what have we always said? I mean, you go on the road, you get a point. I think that's a roadmap to success in MLS. Now, they drop points at home, unfortunately, to Cincinnati, like with the loss. But I think with the last 2 games and with an opportunity, and I think you and I are both kind of on the same path here, like, Orlando's tough because it's hot and it's weird. Luckily, it's not like the middle of June or July.
Well,
it's not August, but it's been hot here.
I was just looking at the weather because my co-host on Common Man and T-Bone is going to the land of Mickey.
Okay.
For a little Mouseketeer action. They're all going to hang out there at the Disney World this upcoming week. And he was telling me the forecast for this weekend when they go there and then all next week.
Smoking.
It's like 90 to 95 and 100% humidity. So it's
sounds awful.
What I'm saying is it's blazing in Orlando from all accounts. I don't know for this game if there's going to be rain. I haven't seen a forecast yet, but I'm saying they're not like in the
70s. Yeah.
So it is going to be
different than Chicago and Montreal.
Yeah, it's going to be a taxing environment for them. So if they can get out of there with a point, I'm happy. 3 would be obviously way above and beyond expectations, and it gets you right back to where I think you should be. Don't forget with MLS, if you don't remember, first 7 teams in each conference are in, then 8 and 9 play a wild card round.
Mm-hmm.
So the Crew are still, as of right now, with all the dropping points to Cincinnati and all that crap and trying to manage all this with all those, ties you had at home during this run with the Champions Cup, you are now 1 more MLS game and Champions Cup, and then you get a 2-week break. And I feel like that is a reasonable amount to manage. Then everybody goes off for international duty, and who knows where that leaves everything. But you are talking about in the summer.
Well, then the transfer window opens, too.
Well, there's that, right, and we don't know what's going to happen there. But what I'm saying is if you can get 3 from Orlando, that puts you in basically you're probably knocking out. You're in the top 5, maybe even 3rd, depending on how results go this weekend. You could find yourself squarely back in that top 4 where you should be, and they, by rights, it's sad that they're not there. But that's if they're top 4 by the time we get to June, I'll feel really good about that.
Yeah, I would too. And it's been weird because we've been talking about it. Champions Cup has taken, I feel like, a lot of the sails out. Well, not taking the sails out of the club, but
wind out of sails.
They put a lot of stock into that competition so far,
sure.
And it's hard to get revved up and geared back up when you know ultimately, like, hey, in a couple of weeks' time, we got to go play a final back down in Mexico. So, like, I understand the human nature of thinking to that game. It's like, okay, necessarily, like, if I'm Aiden Morris, I'm not saying that he does this. I think he obviously plays with a ton of passion every time that he goes out there on the field. But, I'm going in for a 50-50 ball. Like, yeah, we got that game to play for. I'm going to pull up. Like, I think naturally, like, you can do that when you have something to look forward to. I do think we're going to have a better idea, obviously, of where this team stands by the time that we get to, like, the end of June. I think I don't know. I'm not going to panic about anything that happens in the league until we get to June, and then you get to like the time off, then you get to the transfer window. I don't know if I'm necessarily there. I think you could look at like the first quarter and a half of this season and say, yeah, probably not as good as you would like. You would have liked to build up a lead and being able to move, being able to work with some points. I think this team is going to look dramatically different by the time that they get through Leagues Cup. And by the time that we get to August and September, I think it's going to look a lot different than what it does now, just with the nature and the business and everything that's going on. Like, you start to win cups here, like you start to win a lot of games, teams will be interested in your players. So I do think it's going to look different, but I don't think we're going to have a great kind of understanding and look of how it's going to actually operate once we get past that. So, like you said, going to Orlando, give everything you got, knowing that you're a week removed from probably the biggest game that the club has ever had.
Yeah, and I've been trying not to look too much forward to the summer yet, because I'm just, as a fan, I'm almost looking at this like one of those leagues like in Mexico.
Yeah,
or
this
other,
is the end of,
where you have like Apertura and Clausura. Yeah, like even though the points carry over and all that, I'm looking at this one as almost just, yeah, make the most ground you can here and be in a playoff spot, which hopefully, pending results this weekend, they will be. And then from there, you just kind of hit a pause on the season because now you got all this other stuff. It's not like the season's over. I mean, they have games in June, and then you will have the League's Cup break.
Yep.
In, you know, and the Olympics will be coming up too and all that. So
it'll be weird. It's going to be a weird summer.
Yeah. I'll say this, though. Here's the win for me in the transfer silly season deal. I think we could all say Diego Rossi has certainly turned a corner.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even mention him, but he has been one of the keys for this team with Cucho out, why they're able to score goals and doing a ton of great work and making things happen. I'm finally seeing what he does. Saw it a little bit in the playoffs last year, and you're seeing it in Champions Cup games. But, man, seeing him the last few games as well, you can just see the quality is there.
Yeah.
That's good. But here's what I was going to say. The win that you're going to get in the transfer portal. College sports are ruining my life.
It's the same. I say transfer window. When I'm talking about the portal.
Yeah, exactly. Transfer window. What I think your win is this summer is if you come through that with two out of three of the following guys still on the roster, Schulte, Aiden Morris, and Cucho. You get two out of three of those guys to stick around in black and gold. I'm not saying I believe that's likely. I am saying if that happens, that is a huge win for the Crew. And then MLS can watch out the second half of the season. Like, I think that's a major, major thing to keep an eye on.
I would put Wilfried Nancy in that bucket, too.
I don't know. I think
next year's the year?
I feel like that's an off-season thing.
Okay.
I feel like that's something that he does. Yeah. Like, not that.
But the off-seasons are different.
Well, like, you're right. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is, I hadn't really considered that. I know he just signed the contract extension, which in part could be because teams are going to be looking for managers.
Yeah.
You're right. That's a storyline to keep an eye on, too. That could be a possibility.
I think it's less of, I don't want to like get everybody worried. I think it's less of a storyline and a likelihood of a Cucho, Aiden Morris, or Patrick Schulte leaving, though.
Yeah. I tend to think two of those guys could be gone. And it could be Morris and Cucho. Those seem to be the most likely candidates.
Could be Mo Farsi. Like,
well, yeah, you're right. Farsi's been talked about and has, yeah. There's teams looking at everybody on your roster when you're this good.
Yeah.
You know? So now they've got to go deal with that. Speaking of guys leaving, this is a little change for us. Going over to talk about La Liga. A legend is leaving Real Madrid, and that is Toni Kroos.
My guy.
Yeah.
Your guy.
Well, he's a longtime player for them, obviously. One of their greats. And the midfield that they had with him, Luka Modric, and Casemiro, your guy now, for Manchester United.
Not to be long.
No. Not that he's playing well. I'm just saying he plays for your team. But that was quite the trio right there. But even just Modric and Kroos, those two together, quite the dynamic duo. But, yeah, so I saw Luka Modric had some nice words for him, as it looks like Modric is going to come back to Real Madrid.
Yeah, so
I thought I
was too. I mean, a couple of weeks ago it seemed to be like he was going to be done, right? Like that they – because – I have to think Real's got to clear some stuff off. Like they got to clear some of their books. So they're going to bring in Mbappe. They have already signed the contract with Endrick, right? The young Brazilian kid who's 16 or 17. Like, he's going to be coming over. There are rumors out there that Alphonso Davies is going to join Real Madrid because he's not so happy at his time in Bayern Munich, even though he was the one that scored that worldie against them in the Bernabeu. So you have to wonder, like, where are you getting this money from? And it always worries me when, and I'm no like Real Madrid diehard super fan by any means, but I like watching them play, and I've liked watching Toni Kroos and Luka Modric over the years. I respect what they do, and I respect how Real Madrid, even in quote unquote down years, like they're still in the Champions League semifinal or still winning Champions League and La Liga.
Right.
Like, that's the standard. And so I almost wonder for the club, if for Real Madrid, because you always worry about losing some leadership. And I think if Modric and Kroos both leave, that you then all of a sudden, like, yeah, I think that Valverde would be fine in that midfield. I'm talking about talent-wise. Like, they would be fine. Tchouaméni would be fine. Camavinga would be fine. They got some players from their academy. Like, they can go out and sign anybody. But I'm just wondering if they got the news that Toni Kroos was going to retire. They were already out on Luka Modric. And their thoughts were, oh, we're going to bring Toni Kroos back for another year. But we can't lose both of those guys. Like, we can't lose the identity for some of our younger players to understand and learn behind them. So I almost wonder if that Kroos news with him leaving kind of spurred Real Madrid on to say, well, we can't lose two of you in the same offseason. So, you know, Luka, you're obviously more than welcome back. You've done unbelievable things in our midfield over the course of 10 years or however long he's been there. But I almost wonder if that was the case with those two guys.
Yeah, I don't think you're totally wrong on that. And I feel like you have to have guys in every locker room who know how to tell the next generation about the standard.
Yeah.
I don't think it's news that Real Madrid has a high standard for anybody coming to play there.
Yeah, but and until you see the standard, like, day in, day out, like, in training, what these guys do.
Yeah. Well, and guys like Vinny, you know, like, there's so many talented players, like Bellingham, et cetera, that those guys could also be the ones who set that tone, and they will. But I feel like it helps to have some veterans who are beyond their prime who are still showing up and taking it seriously in that way, because then that shows the younger guy, and it takes the burden off of your super duper mega stars that are in their prime trying to, like, make their names. Mm-hmm. It takes a little of that burden off to be like, and also, let me show you the history of this club. Let me be your ambassador. Like, in almost a way, it's good to have a couple older dudes who get it in a way that allows the younger generation to come in. They can all watch in awe as Bellingham does what he does and Vinicius does what he does and all this stuff. But then you don't have to ask those guys, hey, why do you work so hard? Like, you don't have to ask. You can go ask Luka Modric, which, again, not like he's just some tour guide, but I'm saying, like,
one of the best midfielders of all time.
Yeah, but
he's not giving you 90 minutes for 38 straight games, though.
But he can sit on the bench with you and talk. You know, you can have moments with him, even if it's just here and there, a couple moments. High-priced superstars are going to be brought in who are 19, 20, 21 years old, and to have a guy who's in his 30s who can say, hey, guys, I know you're hot stuff. You know who I've played with? Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of you.
Hotter stuff.
Yeah, I've played with hotter stuff than you'll ever know. Like, I'm not worried about any of you. Like, none of you are going to make me nervous. None of you make me. I'm going to go at you in practice. I'm going to go at you in training. And then it sets that tone. And so I think you're right on that. It's a very good point.
Yeah, so do you know what Toni Kroos's achievements have been? So he's announced his retirement from the game, not just Real Madrid. So after the Euros, he's done. Like,
he's done.
His career is going to be over. His list of achievements is pretty remarkable. So, one-time Footballer of the Year in Germany in 2018. So, German Footballer of the Year. He was one-time top goal scorer in the U17 tournament in Germany all the way back in 2006. He was playing U18 when he was in Germany. Five-time Champions League winner, four with Real, one with Bayern. Six-time Club World Cup winner. Three-time German champion, four-time Spanish champion, five-time Super Cup winner, three-time German Super Cup winner, one-time Spanish Cup winner, four-time Spanish Super Cup, one German Super Cup, one Torneo Internacional Algarve, which I don't even know what that means, and one-time World Cup champion.
Well, this is why I think it's important, because you look at teams like Real Madrid, you look at teams like Manchester City, who we'll get to. There's an easy, I do it all the time, you do it all the time, looking at that and going, yeah, those teams win everything because they have all these great players. What I think sometimes gets lost in that conversation is, yeah, they do have great players, but those great players have to then go play. They can't just show up and be like, yep, you've heard of me, and now I'm just going to, like, float around out here. You actually have to go do the thing you were hired to do. And so showing that is kind of the other side of it, right? It does show that guys like Kroos, while they are legends and they were brought into a legendary team and paid a lot of money and all that stuff, they had to go and actually perform. You can't just, it's not like he won all those by doing nothing. He's one of the key reasons why all those teams he's been on, both at Bayern and here, have won all these things.
33 trophies for him.
You know how many it was at Madrid since 2014?
No.
22.
Jesus.
Since 2014.
It's disgusting. It got me thinking too, because, I mean, I don't know how much longer your Lord and Savior Luka Modric is going to be at Real Madrid. It's probably not going to be for very long.
Might have like another year they'd signed him up for or whatever.
So it got me thinking about, like, they're one of the best tandems that we've seen, you know, across the game, at least in recent years. And I think if you put them up against, like, the greats of all time, I think for a midfield, at least, you would have a great argument of guys who, you know, had the most successful partnerships. Was there a duo, and it doesn't have to be like a strike partnership or a midfield or maybe like a back line pairing for you. Are there guys that you hold like partnerships in more regard than others? Because I asked this to our Twitter followers, and I got some pretty good ones. Alex said Tony Chani and Will Trapp, easy, which I thought I thought that was a great answer. And then Pete, shout out Pete, who he does the Liverpool supporters group. Balding, at Balding Yoga on Twitter, said Real Madrid cannot have Alexis Mac Allister as a Kroos replacement. Hands off now. He said the Xabi Alonso, Javier Mascherano double pivot under Rafa was legendary. Shame there wasn't a bigger trophy haul for that team. Yeah.
That's a fair point. Yeah, that's a very good call there. Yeah. I mean, I think you could also go not far away. You could go Xavi and Iniesta.
Of course.
That's a legendary
duo. That's like where my mind first went were those two guys.
You had quite the little tandem, too, with Manchester United. Had a little Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic. That's a great one.
That's a really good one. I mean, you've got the wings and Giggs and Beckham, too. I mean, if you wanted to go like a wing pairing strike partnership, Rooney and Ronaldo. I mean, that was pretty good at the height.
I feel like, obviously, we'd be remiss, like, as crew fans if we didn't mention, like, Lucas El Rayon and Cucho for the time we had them. That was pretty great.
Short-lived, but that was tremendous.
But I'll say one that was a little longer-lived for the black and gold going back a ways. Not a strike partnership by any means, but left-hand side, you had one, Gino Padula, in the from 2008 to 2010 or so, I believe is when that was. Gino Padula and Frankie Hadick. Those were your two outside backs in a 4-4-2 or a sometimes be like a 4-5-1. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point being, you would have those two guys as your two outside backs, two center mids. And there were some good center mid pairings for the crew back then too, but it was usually like Chad Marshall and another guy that you could kind of have some other guys rotate in. But those two guys on the outside, both of them long flowing hair, both of them ran incessantly and ran their mouths incessantly. And two-footed tackles that somehow never got carded. I shouldn't say that. They definitely got their cards. But, both those guys were tough as nails. They get in your face. They would play the game with the ref. Everything you want. That's one of my all-time, those two guys together. Even though they weren't side-by-side, but you knew the outside, you were not coming down those wings against the crew without a fierce challenge, which forced them back to the middle, which then you had a bunch of dudes running things there. And it was tough to break down that 08-09 crew team.
Like Frank Lampard and Fernando Torres, I think would be.
Sure.
I mean, they kind of ripped up the Premier League for a long time.
Absolutely.
Maybe like a Carlos Puyol, who was one of my favorite players. Loved that guy in a Gerard Piqué. Even before Ramos really came onto the spot, you can throw Ramos up with any defender that they've had, any defender Real Madrid or Spain has had. Marcelo and Ramos for Real Madrid, they were remarkable. Ramos and Pepe for a long time because they were both bruisers. I don't know which one was more of the bad boy. I feel like it's a competition. Pepe's still playing, by the way. Remarkable that he's still out there.
Right? Yeah.
Just crazy.
Every time I see him, I'm like, I can't believe this guy is still
playing. Because he was playing for Porto because he was just playing against Arsenal a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, he's still going strong. That was always a pretty fun one. I'm trying to think, Alaba playing with Marcelo, too. That was pretty good. Real Madrid has had a ton of guys over the years. I don't know, thinking about partnerships, Mesut Ozil too, and Cristiano Ronaldo, that was great for a while. Obviously Ozil left the club before that and he got into a bunch of different stuff, but it's always just fun kind of rethinking back to your favorite 1-2 combo. Ji-Sung Park and Patrice Evra, they didn't near play the same positions, but they were best friends. They didn't speak the same language, but they knew how to talk to each other, which I've always kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, those are all good pairings.
Pick two out of the three between Chiellini, Bonucci, and then Buffon. They were in Italy's lineup for 20 years, it seemed.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of U.S. national team. It wasn't quite, I don't know if you would call them a pairing per se, but when they were both on the field, when Brian McBride and Landon Donovan were playing with each other, you could actually
Donovan and
Dempsey is probably even the better one for a longer period of time at a higher level. But I bring up McBride and Donovan just because in that 2002 World Cup, they were both on the field quite a bit. And both of them, it was the guy who was known as the guy, the striker for the U.S. national team in McBride. But then Landon Donovan was the hot young talent that was going to like tear up the wings and, you know, be able to. And then, of course, we know what Landon Donovan ended up doing.
Yeah.
But he lived up to the promise, I think, for the most part. But McBride was the kind of like the steady hand who was already there. And then that little partnership was really good to start off.
And then it kind of became Clint, even though Clint was.
Clint and Dempsey. Or Clint and Dempsey.
Them too.
Clint and Donovan is what I was trying to say. Both of them had their partnership too. But you're right. Clint kind of took over as the guy when it came to like banging just goals. And then Donovan clearly had his goals too. Scored as many as anyone I think ever has. But what I'm saying is he was just this guy who also was so much had to be accounted for him that then Dempsey was able to kind of get his footing and then become now another dude that you had to worry about. And they both ended up flourishing.
I'm trying to think of other ones too. I mean, there's just so many now that you got like open Pandora's box, like a Pirlo and Gattuso.
Sure.
They were tremendous. Seedorf and Kaká back for AC Milan. Like they were unbeatable at one point.
Seedorf and Thierry Henry, I think at one point. Yeah. Right.
That Thierry Henry and Dennis Bergkamp. Like, there's just a bunch of different combinations that you can use. Messi, Neymar, Suarez. I know it's not a pair, but like that was went on display. Yeah. Like that was pretty.
That was quite a thing.
Pretty high powered.
Yeah.
All with Pep coaching them. And
there we go.
Yeah. You know, he ruined everything.
Your guy. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, we'll talk about Pep and the winners of the Premier League, not the Champions League.
Skip it.
We'll mention it next. You're listening to Bone and Beam United.
What a moment!
Now back to Bone and Beam United.
As you found out in that last segment, you can tweet the program at Bone Beam United. We read some of those tweets for you in that last segment. We thank you for the interaction. Keep it going, as always. And of course, follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you're calling it now. I'm calling it Twitter.
I
keep defaulting to that. And then on whatever you're getting us on a podcast, if there is a way to follow us or subscribe, make sure you're doing that too. It helps us out. Make sure that people don't miss an episode. So let's talk about Decision Day, the Premier League. I mean, the short story is the thing we thought was going to happen at the beginning of the year happened again.
Just to recap everything that we've been doing for 9 months, the thing that you and I both predicted to happen did.
Yeah.
And the last 9 months have been rendered useless.
Pretty much. I mean, not really. We had
for your villains.
The villains got it done. Yeah, they're back in Europe. Way to go by them. But yeah, I mean,
got smoked in the common man T-Bone Derby.
They didn't care. No one cared. It's fine. Who cares? It's all over. It's all done. They're on to Europe. It's good.
Crystal Palace going to get relegated next year.
Could be. Never know.
Did you see let's talk about Decision Day first. And then we can get to everything else going on.
Yeah. So, first off, obviously, you know that Manchester City won their game, and they beat West Ham 3-1.
So it was my grandma's 90th birthday last week.
Oh, congratulations to grandma.
Yeah. Great. It was awesome. We had like a surprise party for her on Friday night. She was great. So, hung out in Dayton on Saturday, and then on Sunday morning, I wanted to come back because William and Meredith were down there. So they came back a little bit earlier. We took two cars because I left as soon as I left work on Friday and then went down to Dayton. Mayor left after work. So we had two cars. They went back a little bit earlier. I'm like, I'm going to go over. I'll see my grandma. I'll see my mom. Just kind of hang out with them for a little bit, see if anything needs to be done around the house. Just trying to help out as much as I can being down there. And so I am like driving over to their house. It's like 10:45. I'm like, oh, yeah, decision day. That all starts at 11. I'm like, okay, I don't know. Maybe I'll stay for the games to see kind of what's going on. And I ended up doing that. But I'm listening to ESPN FC on the radio. I'm listening to the radio broadcast of it while I'm driving from Mayor's mom's to my grandma's. And so they're like, all right, first, you know, here we go. Decision day 2024 underway. The title to play for here at the Etihad. We will keep you up to date with what is going on down at the Emirates. Like, they're doing the city game.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, their play-by-play is the city game, but they're like, we'll keep you up to date with everything that's happening across the Premier League. Foden tearing down the middle. Goal! Like, well, thanks a lot, Hammers. Thanks,
yeah, it sounds
thanks,
like that one's...
Thanks for coming out to play.
Well, however, did you see that? Apparently, some of the Arsenal fans got a little start because on Twitter or on some social media, it got out there because City got up 2-2, and then
West Ham pulled it back 2-1 right before halftime with Kudus goal.
Yes, and then somebody had perpetrated a hoax apparently on social media and said that it had tied up 2-2, and so Arsenal fans were like cheering in the stands for a minute because it was getting on social media that they had it had, that a tie was happening. Not that it was done, but that they had tied it up. So you think, man, if they can tie it up, now who knows if that would have lasted.
Right.
But it gives you hope. And instead, that quickly was found out to be not true. And then Manchester City went on to win. Or yeah, they went on to win 3-1. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much, that was the end of all that. Even though Arsenal got their victory against Everton, 2-1. Doesn't matter. Couldn't do anything about it.
No.
Points were the points.
It was good for
that.
Them. And the broadcaster kept using the term academic, which I thought was really good. They're like, it's academic at the yep. point, at this yeah. point. Like, City sure. are going to win the title. And there's a great goal that was scored by West Ham in, like, stoppage time. Or like the Well, not stoppage time. Like, the 88th minute. It was just scored with a volleyball spike to try to do anything.
yeah,
to, like,
right.
score a goal against
right.
them.
Yeah.
They went to VAR. It was immediately called back. But, yeah, four in a row for them. I don't know.
You know, you don't have to say anything, Beam. What do we have to say? What is everybody else saying? All around the world, they're all talking about Manchester City, the greatest team, and blah, 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 and they won the Premier League, and yeah. Here's what we can say.
Pep changed soccer. I mean, we
sure
know
he
it.
Did. But Pep and the money. Like, yeah. it's the same thing with Phil Jackson. You cannot talk about the Lakers and the Bulls of the 90s and early 2000s and say that Phil Jackson was a bad head coach. He is not. He won multiple championships with both those teams. But if you don't have Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant in their primes on those teams, do you win that many championships? I doubt it. I still think you would have won championships. And I think that's the same thing with Pep. Like, the credit goes to guys like Phil Jackson and Pep Guardiola because they can manage all these immense talents and get everyone focused in and do what they have to do.
Yeah.
But when it comes to this, certainly, and we just talked about it with Real Madrid, you have to go out and those guys actually have to go perform. So give Pep credit for a system that works, that allows guys to play their to play the way they need to, finding the right guys to play that system, mm-hmm. and then all those guys buying in and doing their jobs. But at the end of the day, do you think Manchester City wins four straight if it's not just you can go spend pretty much whatever you need to
no.
find these players? Of course not.
Well, they also have the 115 charges against them. And I know that City fans
course,
listening to this are like, oh, my God, I'm tired of hearing about the charges. Yeah, I'm tired of you ripping off trophies, too. So,
well, that's the other thing, right, is it's like, yeah. I mean, ask Everton about being tired of the charges. Every
they
time
had
they get,
two and got dropped 8 points.
They jaywalk, and it's like you're going right to the
you're
death.
You're going to
you're
jail,
getting, yeah, you get
buddy.
A firing squad. But so, then it's like 115 charges, and it's like, what? Who?
I did see this to be interesting. So their relegation odds for next year. And I
whose?
The entire Premier League, like relegation odds for teams to be relegated.
Sure.
So newly promoted Leicester back in the Premier League, they are your odds on favorite to be relegated again at 1-2 odds. So they okay. are a hat basically for every $2 you put, you get $1 back.
So yeah,
in right. return, Ipswich newly promoted as well. They are 8-11 odds. So the same kind of,
not, yeah, it's not quite 2-1, but similar.
Everton are third at 5-4 odds.
Boy.
Nottingham Forest at 9-4, so they're fourth. Wolves at 7-2, Brentford 9-2, Fulham at 9-2. Then you get into, you know, the kind of the everybody who is looking to be outside of the relegation battle. Bournemouth 7-1 odds, Crystal Palace 8-1 odds, which I think is the way that they finish the season. They're probably looking at a big summer ahead of them, like Olise and all those guys probably going to
yeah.
go somewhere else. They'll bring
yeah.
a lot of money to the club. Good for them. Chelsea at 16-1.
I'm not saying that's likely, but it's interesting that that's a discussion.
West Ham at 16-1.
It's amazing that those two have the same odds.
Yeah, right? Brighton at 20-1. What would you say that Arsenal and Liverpool's odds of getting relegated are? Because you would put
Arsenal
City,
and Liverpool.
You would
I would
put
assume
City
it's,
in that bucket, right? Like you would
yeah,
put them in.
Yeah.
Obviously, like very long odds to get relegated.
I
correct?
Would say it's like 300-1 odds.
2,000-1.
Oh God.
2,000-1, which makes sense. Like it's just not.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Like,
right.
They're not
yeah.
going to get relegated. Care to take a stab at where Manchester City's odds are to get relegated?
10,000-1. I don't know.
25-1. No. Their odds to get relegated are
Wait.
25,
you're saying 25-1.
25-1.
Oh, wait. I thought you meant 25,000.
No.
Oh.
25-1.
Oh.
To get relegated.
Okay.
So I don't know what that means. I don't.
Yeah, you just said Chelsea was 19-1.
Yeah.
Brighton was 20-1. They're 25-1.
Aston Villa, your guys are 80-1.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That
City
that tracks way more.
25-1 to get relegated next year.
Yeah.
Which means to me that the bookmakers know something's coming.
Well, they're worried about it. So to be clear, that is like plus 2,000, right? 20-1
plus
is like
2,500.
Plus 2,500. It's 25-1, right?
Yeah.
So like that is, yeah, I mean, when you had Leicester win the Premier League, they were at plus 5,000. They were
they were 5,000 to 1.
That's right. You're right. That's right. 5,000 to 1, not plus 5,000, not 50 to 1.
Yeah.
5,000 to 1. So this is significantly smaller odds that Manchester City, your four-time defending champs, get relegated next year. Could we see them? I don't think they're getting relegated. Could it be something, though, that with enough, if there are points deductions coming and there are things coming down the pike and
something has to happen.
Well, right. But if punishment happens and let's say they are docked a significant number of points, could we see them finish outside of like Champions League? I think that's a fairly reasonable discussion to have.
I do too. And I don't think that, like, let's even say that it's a 60 point deduction.
Like, well, I
still think that they would get themselves out of relegation.
Yes, they would. You're right.
Like they would get 85. Oh, they would get like 85 points.
Yeah.
90 point. They got 90, what, 92 this year, I think, is what the final number was, or 91, whatever
I think
it
you're
was.
Right, yeah.
Like, if they get, if they had a 60-point deduction, that would be 31 points. That would put them, like, mid-lower table.
God. It's insanity. It's insanity to think of that, where, like, they could go for 90 points. Like, I'm saying that they could have, if, like, they're not going to get a 60-point deduction, to your point. I don't think they're getting something that significant. They might get 20 or 30. And that still is going
to
keep them from, they're not getting
they
relegated.
They won't win the title at 20.
They won't win the, no, they won't win the title. That's just too much to overcome.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my God, like, the top three teams were all in the 80s to 91. But then, what was, because Villa was fourth, and I think they were in, like, 60. The 60s. Like,
yeah, 60 or so like, high 50.
I'm saying, if you knock them 20 or 30 points, they can still make Champions League, they can still all this other stuff. So, I have always thought part of the Manchester City issue is that the Premier League does not want to, because it's them that institute this punishment, right? The FA?
Mm-hmm.
So that hurts English football if you don't have one of your best teams playing in Champions League.
Does it?
No. That's their argument. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that would be their argument is we should have – they want English football to win Champions League, do
but
they
it's
not?
X amount of dollars back in their pockets, yeah.
Right. So what I'm saying is they would not want to see that team – and obviously they're already in next year. But I'm saying they would not want to see that team ever miss the – and to miss Champions League if they have this roster that they have. So if you dock them like 20 or 30 points, that's still going to keep them well in the Champions League fight, and they probably still get in.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't miss them in the Champions League where you have a chance to bring that glory back to England. But they get their punishment in the Premier League, which keeps at least some people happy with, hey, they were punished significantly for what they did. And enjoy your four titles. And nothing. And yeah, you won't have a chance to win one that year.
I just don't. I have no idea and no comprehension of what the point total is going to be.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
None.
Do
I have
we know
no
if there's
idea.
Like, are there any type of dates set for?
No, there's nothing. We haven't heard anything about
there's
it.
There's just a belief clearly among some people with money that are making these odds and that are putting bets down already. There's clearly a belief that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
That there's at least a chance that something could happen with that. Wow. You imagine like a 100-point deduction.
I would love it.
Where they just finish with negative points and they're out of the Premier League. It's never going to happen that
no,
they're going to do that.
Of course it's not. They're too big to do it.
Too big to fail.
Everton, if Everton had the same charges, they would kick Everton.
Everton
like,
would
right,
be in the fourth division.
Yeah, they'd be down with Wrexham.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. All right, so let's talk about some other shock. I thought this was kind of surprising to me. Mauricio Pochettino out after 1 year at Chelsea.
Finished the year really good. Really strong. I mean, middle of the year, like December during the break, I think they were hovering around like 12th or 13th in the table. And then Cole Palmer caught fire. I mean, he was terrific.
Oh, sure.
You know, the last month of the season, last 6 weeks, whatever it be. They got Nkunku back. He started to roll a little bit. It was head-scratching to me because they didn't bring him in that long ago. Fun fact about Manchester City. Fun fact about Chelsea, they have been through now 24 managers. This will be their 25th, the new hire after Poch. It will be their new hire, will be their 25th manager since 2000. So they've basically gone through one manager. This is including caretakers as well. What to me is stunning. I mean, to think about the amount of success that they have had domestically and internationally over, you know, the course and time of the last 20 years, to think that they've been through that amount of managers to me is shocking. And well, that they're moving on from Mauricio Pochettino, dude, which got them playing in the right direction. You have another month left in the season. Like, all of a sudden you kick that, you started that maybe back in February and started doing that in March, what they're doing. Like, you're not maybe talking about like a Champions League push. You're talking about, all right, if we can string a few more together, like, we're finishing top three, top four.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that. Now, this is where I just differ with what apparently the Chelsea front office thinks on this, or at least one of the co-owners apparently thinks about this. So the story is that, because you're aware that Todd Bailey, the American, one of the American owners in the Premier League, he took over this team in May of 2022. And since that time that his ownership group took over, they've spent $1.27 billion on transfers. So to be mid-table in this season where you've hired in a manager that we all thought, okay, well, Pochettino is going to come in and get this thing turned around, that's not great. To be there at any point in the season is not great.
Yep.
However, then, like you said, you have one of your guys that you had high hopes for, and Cole Palmer, right? Manchester City product, am I wrong? Right?
Yep.
They've loaned out or transferred over to him. Transferred, not loaned. Yeah, obviously transferred. That helps, right? But finishing sixth with that amount of payroll, I can understand. I can see a case being made that it's not enough progress. However,
I can
it's also
too, but progress
it's also
doesn't
one,
happen in one season.
It's also 1 year. And if now I will say this, because apparently Ponch and so Todd Bailey, the American owner, he seemed to be okay with keeping Ponch around for another year. But it was one of the other co-owners, whose name is Bedad Egbali. He and apparently the co-sporting directors of Paul Winstanley and Lawrence Stewart, they agreed that it was time for a change. So Ponch apparently had issues with their lack of forward planning, by all accounts from inside the building. So if his issue was, gang, I think we can do better, but I don't, he didn't like how the club was ran day to day. He had a lot of issues with some of, I guess, the way things were done there. And so what worries me, if you're a Chelsea fan, is that a guy who has shown you, I shouldn't say Ponch has gotten everything done ever. I mean, he's still got some big holes on his resume when it comes to the level of talent that he's managing. He's not expected to just go in and help you fight for a Champions League spot. He's expected to help you make Champions
win,
League, no
win,
doubt.
Win a Champions League.
Win a Champions League. Win Premier League. That kind of thing is what his expectations are. When you're given that, I think it then becomes imperative that you actually get it done. However, he has seen the inside workings of some pretty good clubs and I think has the ability to say, this ain't the way it should be. We have to do better. I don't like this. The fact that the owner said, how dare you question that? You should be doing better. Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of you and bring in someone else who won't apparently question that. It seems like they are more concerned about not having their own organization looked at through a microscope or a magnifying glass than they are about winning games. I would think at the very least you give Ponch another year. And by the way, by December, it could be clearly evident that he's not got it. He's not getting a job done,
right,
and you could fire him anyway. Why wouldn't you take another offseason? Now, again, if he's saying, and I need another $800 million worth of players
then
or we can't do it,
then
that's different. But assuming he's not being ridiculous with that and he's just saying, I need to know what the long-term plan is here, then I think they're making a bad move here. I do not think this is a good idea.
I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. I think it's very stupid. I think it was very dumb. I like to look at trends, recent trends. And I think over the course of the last 6 weeks, 2 months of the season, like, Chelsea were playing way different than what they were at the beginning of the year. And they had some injury issues and they had some guys. Like, I know that Poch isn't coming in there and these aren't all his guys. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But you look at since like February, March, April, how different they've been playing in April and May compared to everything else. I don't understand for the life of me how you've decided to move on from him so quickly when he did seem to be finally turning the ship around. And then to your point, if it goes poorly at the beginning of next year and all of a sudden you fall down and you're in 10th by the time that like November Thanksgiving rolls around, then you can make the move.
It's such a weird time to do this because it's not like you have I'm guessing they don't have a clear-cut winning solution there. You know what I mean? Is there someone that you can say out on the market that could be hired? Unless Jurgen Klopp is coming and saying,
not,
I'll do
and
it.
And he's not.
And unless Pep Guardiola is saying, I'll
he's
do
not.
It, which he's not. Like, I don't, that's what I mean. Like, clearly neither of those are what we think is happening
here.
Go
back to Frank Lampard?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, they've done so many things here with running Chelsea this way. I don't know what the logic was with not sticking it out here. Just another 6 months. And then see. And then if like by then you're mid table, then sure, you gotta do what you gotta do. I know they don't want to believe that. They want to think if we get the right manager, we can get all these players that we've invested in to just suddenly play better. But the reality is you're probably gonna have to change the roster some more.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to get rid of some guys that don't work with what Ponch wants to do. And he might find replacements that are either similar cost or maybe a little lower cost, but that do what he wants.
And now guess what you're going to have to do with an entirely new manager who's going to bring in a new play system. All of your players, maybe not all of them, some of them will be warranted useless. Like Cole Palmer, who's to say, like, all right, maybe, and I don't know their team meetings. I'm not in there, but yeah. It's like, hey, this is what we're doing, Cole. Like, you excel in this area. We're going to doctor this up because we think that you can do this. And, like, you know, Mudrick can do this on the other side. Like, yeah, Gallagher and everybody else, like now with Nkunku and everybody, like, okay, we're going to work around and these are what we can do. Now, a good new manager can come in and also do that. But, like, you had Cole Palmer playing the way that he was playing. I would want to keep that guy playing the way that he's playing.
Yeah, I know. I would almost think what's likely to happen here is they're going to go out and hire someone again because there's not a Pep or a Jurgen that's coming in and taking this job. I would think they're going to go out. Now, again, it could be that maybe they're going to hire the guy we're about to talk about with Bayer Leverkusen. I mean, we don't know anything currently with the situation there, right? We still haven't figured out what's going on with Xabi Alonso. We don't know. But
the fact that he didn't take the Liverpool job tells me that he's going to stick it out with Leverkusen for another year.
But even if you bring in a guy like that, what's the first thing he's going to do? All right, let me tell you who I need.
Yeah, look at the roster.
Look at my results. You should trust me to say I need to build this roster the way I want to. They're going to hire someone because of this. I presume it's because in part they want to see these investments work out. So they're going to hire someone who says, I can take what you have and make it work. Even if those parts are incongruous and they don't actually look that good together, they're going to get someone who can sell them on the idea.
But Poch was making it work with the guys on the team.
Well, that's the other thing. Right. But he wasn't winning Champions League. And that's the thing. It's like, their expectations are so out of line with where they actually are as a club, despite what they've spent.
Yeah.
Ignore how much you've spent now. What are you as an actual club as results on the field? Finishing sixth is not that bad for Chelsea. Like, it's bad historically for them. It's not bad with what they were trying to be this year. And I think with Ponch, he's probably saying, I need to know that there's support for me if I'm going to keep going in this role. And they probably said, well, we need to see results. I just feel like you're going to start chasing your tail and you're going to become this team that, well, we fired Ponch after a year. We can't keep this other slack-jawed loser around.
They've been through 24 managers since 2000.
Yeah. I mean, it's an undeniably.
Do you know what they have won since 2000?
Yes, they've won lots of things.
They've won everything. They have
Champions
five,
League,
five Premier League titles since 2000.
Good God.
They have five FA Cups. They have three Carabao Cups. They have two Champions Leagues. They have two Europas Leagues. They have a Club World Cup. They have a Super Cup. They have done all that, and they have churned and burned through guys left and right.
It seems like this may just not be the right way to run a club. That's what it seems like to me.
But that's not even going back to even Todd Bailey. Like, that's even before all of this, too.
Yeah, I know. It's a joke, man. It's a joke, and I think we're at a point now where we have to be realistic about the fact that Chelsea is being run by ownership that, yeah, you're right, previous to that group, but they are more focused on looking at the dollars and cents and the bottom line of what they paid for, which I get to a degree. But
now you've also paid Mauricio Pochettino to go away. Like, you're also paying him however much he was making, $20 million a year, like whatever contract he signed, like that's dead money now too off the books.
Well, that's what none of this makes sense to me. And I know that there'd been reports in the media. He had even said this in a press conference where he said, you know, maybe it would be better if I'm just not the coach. You know, like they say this is a mutual decision, but to me, it all smells of, they saw that 12th place around middle of December, January, whenever it was. And they said, this guy's done. We hate him.
Yeah.
And then no matter what he did the rest of the way out, that was just in their minds. They had moved on, the people in this meeting who said they moved on. And he's getting wind of that going, excuse me, did you guys not think did you think it would take me just 2 weeks and I'd have this thing suddenly competing for a Champions League final? Like, no, we've got to build this and I've got to fix it because you got a lot of problems around here. And they're all tapping their foot waiting for, like, where are our trophies? I feel like that is what caused him to say, well, if you don't want me or if you're uncertain about me, then I don't know if I want you. I'll go find plenty of other places that will give me what I want and let me have free reign to do what I need to do. He'll be a hot title back again in coaching, which, by the way, if Wilfried Nancy comes available because maybe he takes a job in Europe, paunch to Columbus.
We also had this conversation the last time that Thomas Tuchel was fired from Chelsea.
That's so right. Yeah.
Ex-Chelsea managers.
To Columbus.
You are also, well, Jose Mourinho, come on over.
Oh. Like,
we'll have you over here. That would be great.
It would be the highlight of my life to watch Dom Tiberi interview Jose Mourinho one-on-one. I would pay so much money to be in the room and watch.
Hey, Jose.
Hey. So you coached in Italy, huh? All right. You know, and just that's.
Here's my meatball recipe.
Yeah. What do you think about this? Support or support? You know what I mean? And then Jose just, I don't know what you're saying.
I am the chosen one. I am the special one.
Yeah. What makes you special? What makes you chosen, huh? Why are you chosen?
Bring Jose back to Chelsea for
a
third
why
time.
Not? Let's do it. Let's just have some more fun.
See, opposite ends of that spectrum is that Poch was fired from Chelsea. Well, left amicably, parted ways. Like, if the news came out that United fired Erik ten Hag, you'd be like, yep, get it. Like,
totally understood. Absolutely.
You've had 2 years.
Yep.
By the way, they're going to get smoked on Saturday.
Oh, dude, yeah. That's
just smoked.
Yeah, that's not going to go well. So let's finally talk about this. Europa League final is one of the two matches that stand between Leverkusen and a completely unbeaten, unblemished season. They obviously have tied quite a few times, but they have not lost. They have two cup finals in 4 days. The first one is actually, by the time you hear this podcast, it'll already be done. It is the Europa League final against Atalanta. And that is the one that is really, to me, what is going to be tough, right? Because
it's a European final, man. It's in Dublin, too, I think.
Yes, it is. It's in Dublin. So that's going to be like for a trophy, and Atalanta will be ready for that. And they're a very good team, and all that stuff is true. Then on Saturday, they are playing the DFB Pokal final against Kaiserslautern. Kaiserslautern is your guys. Middle table, second division German soccer.
Kaiser-Soze.
Right. So presumably all the eggs are in the basket of this one for Leverkusen. They've got to win on Wednesday. If that happens, then Saturday looks like not a given, but as close as that gets in world soccer.
I'll tell you what's going to happen is that if this game is tied anywhere near the 90th minute, I will hop on my sportsbook app and place a wager on Leverkusen.
What, to win?
Yes.
Whoa.
God, yes.
Right.
If this game is tied anywhere near the end moments, given like they've had 16 goals in the 90th minute or later
this year,
I'm going for it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Although these are finals, so they do have the potential to go extra time and go into penalty kicks and all that. But you're right.
What a remarkable story. Like, just remarkable.
Yeah, even if they don't, it's still a remarkable story. It's crazy. But now just to have that zero in the loss column.
Yeah.
After 50, well, what'll it be? 40.
I think they broke the record at 40.
It's 52. It's 53. They have 53 games. They are 51 played right now. The one against Atlanta is 52. And then the final in Saturday is 53.
And they already broke the record. I think Benfica had the record at like 46 or 47.
Yeah,
didn't they?
They did. They broke the European record. They've broken everything.
Yeah.
Like no team has had a season like this in the history of European
soccer.
In the
history of ever.
No team has had this season because only the teams that play in Europe can do this because they play in Europe and no European team has ever done this. So technically no team in the world has ever gone undefeated in Europe, but that's only because certain teams play in Europe, but you get my point. There's probably teams that have gone undefeated in other competition somewhere that we're just not thinking of, but yeah, as far as this goes, pretty impressive.
The fact that we've gone from Bayern Leverkusen this year,
Bayern never losing,
to Bayern never losing is remarkable.
Yeah, right. They completely flipped that narrative. It's unbelievable.
God, that's great. Xabi Alonso looks so good too.
And if you're listening to this on Thursday or Friday, and you're like, "Yeah, boys, they lost 3-1 to Atlanta."
That makes sense.
Well, you know why we jinxed them.
Yeah,
it was our fault. Yeah. You can blame us.
We didn't jinx anybody. No, we've done our fair share of jinxing, but we're not jinxing that great looking beard. No way.
I hope not.
I saw a video of him yesterday taking free kicks out in Dublin for the final.
I'm gonna guess he's still just.
Oh, he was barred down like 3 yards.
God,
I mean, he's
God. Those guys are
looking
just
sweet in the tank top, too. Oh, like he's out there in the tank top.
Oh, yeah, he still looks like he could play.
Of course, you can.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they
should. Watching a video, too, the other day. This was a couple of weeks ago now, probably. Just fizzing passes in. Like, you guys can't do this in practice? Watch this.
Yep. That's one of the underrated aspects of being a legendary player.
Yeah.
Is when you're a coach, then it's like, why don't you do it? It's like, okay, I'll show you exactly how I do it. Here you go. Now go do that.
No one ever said that to Zinedine Zidane on the sideline of Real Madrid.
No. Go show us
how
can
you
do
this, coach? Actually, yeah.
I can do all of it. I can do everything you want, and I'll headbutt your ass. Like, you watch out.
Tell Marco Materazzi, I said hi.
All right, that's it for us. Enjoy your beginning of your summer, hopefully, and let's hope for a nice victory for all of our favorite teams, especially the Crew this weekend.
You got an FA Cup final prediction?
No, because I forget who's in it.
City and United.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Get smoked.
Does United score a goal?
No.
Okay. Then I'll say
0-0, 5-4 in penalties. United.
I'm gonna say 3-1 City.
Okay, that's respectable. I'll say 5-0 City.
Jeez.
Yeah. Okay. It's gonna be a disaster.
Okay. Well, I hope not for your sake. I'll be rooting for him. Mm-hmm. Sorry we didn't talk about that more. I'm sorry I forgot that happened. I'm sorry for being a bad friend.
It's the biggest game of our lives.
No, it's not. Not even close. All right. We'll see you guys next time. You're listening to Bone and Beam United.